Is this thing on? Yes, hello and welcome to the Tarlest End podcast, episode 265. It has been just 62 days since Reading last played a game of football. And you know what? We're actually in action tomorrow. So we thought, let's bring back the old boys and get some news and views and update you on what's been going on in the summer. I'm your host, Mark Mayo. This is the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. And, well, it's been a bit of a mixed 62 days or so, as we'll fill you in on in just a moment. But to do that with me is Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tarlest End. How's it going, mate?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. It's as luckily, as a football fan, this last 62 days has been quite interesting. So it's not been too much of a case of missing Reading. And Ollie Allen, the assistant editor of the Tarlest End, joining us as well. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. I must admit, I've not given too much of a thought to Reading, actually, amongst all the football's coming home mania over the last 4 weeks, but it seems we've got a whirlwind of news all in a couple of days now.
Yeah, it's popped up at probably, I'd say, a couple of days early, in reality, being an England fan, but it's all popped up, and there's plenty to talk about. So this is hopefully a bit of a shorter show, so we're not going to do the intros and all that sort of stuff, but let's give a shout out to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who are joining us for another season ahead of the new campaign. Big thanks to them for sticking on board. We'll have the we don't have the shirt and all the signing on contract photos, sadly, because of COVID, but you can just imagine the absolute shambles that they would be if we managed to put those together. And of course, big thanks to all our Patreon subscribers who continue to put their hand in their pocket for us and help us keep ticking over with the show and the website. And well, let's start with the big news of the summer so far. It is, unfortunately, depending on your disposition, not great news for Reading. Michael Olise leaving the club for an estimated £8 million going to Crystal Palace in the Premier League. And really, I mean, Sim, in a word, how would you describe this one? Is it a disappointing situation? And does it make you angry? Are you perhaps slightly relieved or content? Is this a good deal?
Bittersweet, in a word, to be honest. On one level, it leaves me with a lot of pride that we've been able to develop such a really good player. And the fact that we're disappointed to lose someone to a Premier League team who's been such a joy to watch is obviously on one level positive. But the fact that we are losing him, we are going to be denied watching him again in the future. And only getting 8 million, which, to be honest, is a fraction of what he would be worth in another transfer window if he was on a longer contract, if there wasn't a release clause. So mixed feelings, really. But obviously hopeful that we can move ahead with it and replace him properly, but also a little bit kind of worried that we won't be able to do that.
Yeah, it's very much, as we'll get on into a moment, a situation that we as fans don't quite understand fully and probably won't ever understand fully until the end of the transfer window. Olise scored 7 goals in 44 championship appearances last year, 12 assists. That's a pretty good total. Obviously won the Young Player of the Year for the EFL. However, Ollie, I suppose the thing that we're most rueing is the potential that he could have met. You know, if those were his figures this year, you'd have to think that next season, if he was in the Championship, his figures could be 20 goals and 20 assists or something like that. That's the real, I suppose, the real thing that we're missing out on. And in a way, does that perhaps lessen the blow of this transfer? Because Reading, you know, it's not a thing, it's potential. He could break his leg next week. Obviously, don't want anything bad to happen to him. We hope he fulfills his potential, but it's not a concrete thing. And if Reading were to go to the market, they don't need to replace a 20-goal-a-season midfielder, because that's not what he was. He was a 7-goal-a-season midfielder, which is easier.
Yeah, I mean, look, in theory, it is the foundations of a pretty solid business model that Reading haven't really utilised over the last couple of years, you know, producing players from your academy, particularly when you're a club of Reading stature, a second tier club. If you can produce players from your academy to then sell on for a profit, obviously they cost you nothing to make, really, apart from the labour of the coaches or whatever. But there is potential for you to make a massive profit on these players. You know, we saw Omar Richards go to Bayern Munich for free. You know, that's a big missed opportunity. Obviously, the chance was that had Olise stayed at the club, yes, we might have got another season out of him. Yes, You know, he might have got 20 goals, 20 assists next season, but then he would have left next summer for free. So the fact we have got something for him is good, as I say, but the club haven't really utilised that model the last couple of years. As I say, Richards for free, Danny Loader went for free. You know, it is good that we are making money out of our academy prospects. You know, as you say, his potential for me, you know, the sky is the limit for Michael Olise. You know, he could very, very easily be playing Champions League football in 5 years' time. You know, he's still only 19 years old. You know, I'm sure he'll go on to have an international career. You know, he's eligible for what, England, France, I think Nigeria as well. So, as I say, there are endless possibilities as to where his career could go. And I'm just very, very excited to see, you know, what's next for him, because I don't think he'll be at Palace for very long. I think he'll go even higher. So, yeah, gutted to lose him, but very, very excited for his future.
That's another aspect of this release clause, is that maybe there's the potential for a sell-on fee or something like that. Probably not. And that could be a real blow, Sim, financially, is that, yes, you get £8 million in the bank now. That's not, my opinion is that that's not money to sniff at. You know, you don't, Reading are in an awful position. If there is a scenario actually where if he had a couple more years on his contract, or he only had 1 year left and there was no release clause, would clubs like Palace be coming in with lowball offers of £4 million or £5 million, saying, you know, that's all you're going to get? £8 million at least sort of set the bar where we knew it, where it's going to be. But for now, we can put £8 million in the bank, and that's money that we can keep the club going with, basically. But in the future, if there's no sell-on fee, if he does go on to be a great player, it is hard to see that it is a great deal, although, as Ollie says, it could have obviously been zero.
Yeah, absolutely. A sell-on fee would have been really key for us, because Reading's financial problems aren't just going to be solved overnight. It's not going to be one summer transfer window where everything clears up and we're suddenly in a good position, able to splash the cash and go forwards. It's a rolling thing. It's a long-term thing. Reading need to have that kind of long-term view for getting as much money, not just now, but in future windows as well. And missing out on maybe a few million from Elise if we don't have a release sell-on clause in the future would be a huge blow. And obviously the same thing with, say, Danny Loader. Obviously we're not going to get any money from him in the future. Omar Richards. And it's something that may have a future effect for us. I think we're still possibly paying for Lucas Schwau and George Puskas. I think those deals were structured as kind of paying them over a couple of years. And it does show that it's not just about looking at one window. There's really got to be that kind of long-term holistic view. And if Reading can sort that, then we will have a brighter future. But as Ollie has alluded to earlier, it's something that the owners haven't really done as much. Reading haven't really had that ability to sell intelligently for setting up the club in the long run.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing that I point out is that getting him to sign a contract in 2019, we all said at the time it was a great deal. Loader wasn't signing a contract at that time, and maybe without the release clause, he simply wouldn't have signed. And that's the sad fact of being a Reading fan ultimately, is that firstly, the club's stature is not enough and the club's overall finances are not enough to just keep players whenever we want. And secondly, this team's in the Crystal Palace, their finances are light years away from us, because they have every single season, even if they get relegated, they know they're going to make X hundred million pounds from TV money if they're in the Premier League. Even, as I say, even get relegated, the parachute money keeps them well above any kind of trouble. And that is the sad fact of being Reading Football Club at the moment, is you don't get to dictate the terms all the time. And hopefully, you know, in terms of getting a replacement, let's talk about that now and what it does for the team. Because, you know, we've got a few players that only have 1 year left on their contract. I know Josh Lawrence, there's been talk that he might be interested in other clubs. He's, I think, only got 1 year left, although, again, not always sure about these things. If Reading want a replacement, Ollie, they can look down the leagues and leagues one and two, and potentially that's the best place for them to go to find someone new and bolster out the squad a little bit in the next few weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, particularly with, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a bit, this transfer embargo. Obviously, we are going to be limited to loan deals or free transfers. You know, there's obviously, you know, we haven't even mentioned John Swift yet, who obviously, in theory, I think at the start of last season, you know, would have been first choice in that starting 11 ahead of Michael Olise. You know, we know Swift has his injury problems and obviously missed a very large chunk of last season with various problems, but they are going to have to get creative, as I say, you know, with this embargo. You know, there's not an awful lot of wriggle room, really. You know, if John Smith can stay fit, then we know the qualities that he has. We know on his day he can be, you know, one of the best midfielders in the Championship, you know, in terms of his creative output, his passing ability. You know, he is almost a ready-made replacement for Olise that was there before Olise, you know, even broke into the first team. So it's going to have to sort of take some sort of working around from Veljko Paunović, and obviously Ovi Ejaria as well can play that number 10 role. Spent, you know, all of last season playing out wide on the left because we have no other wingers, but he can also play there. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to sort of see how Paunović deals with it, because obviously this £8 million has come into the club, but you know that it's not going to be reinvested. Let's be realistic with this embargo. You know, that £8 million is simply coming into the club to, you know, reduce the club's loss to prove to the EFL that, you know, we can be a sustainable football club, that we can bring in transfer fees. It's unfortunately not going to be reinvested. So yeah, it's either going to have to be someone already at the club. It's going to have to be, you know, maybe someone coming through the academy. You know, I tend to think probably none really of the under-23 squad at the moment are ready to step up and play week in, week out at Championship level. You know, all of the under-23 squad currently are no older than 19. Obviously, we had this mass cull of academy players last summer and several more have left this summer. And that has left, you know, almost a whole generation of academy players, you know, not at the club. So it's going to be a big ask for someone, say, like Femi Aziz, maybe, Linford Saki, possibly, stepping up. But yeah, it's probably going to have to be someone internally or a very canny free signing or loan deal.
Well, we've already had Yannick Bolasie and Junior Hoylett linked with the club. Those are both free agents. And the reason why, we'll come back to the embargo in just a second. But Sim, in terms of the team, what does this do for you? Does this mean that we do just move Ejaria or Swift into the middle? Does it? Obviously, that means we need to sign some wingers. We probably thought we needed to sign some wingers anyway. We did lack pace at quite a few times last season to kind of unlock defences and stuff like that. Do you think that it would mean it would be better to go with a sort of three-man base rather than a two-man base? Add, you know, someone alongside Lon and Rinomota to bolster further, and then go three more attacking players alongside Lucas Shaw. How does it settle around the team for you?
Yeah, so the thing about Elise leaving is it does give us the opportunity to rejig. It's a problem that I think we had even as far back as Mark Bowen, having to fit in Ejaria, Swift and Elise, all three kind of similar players. And I guess the 4-2-3-1 was a sensible answer for that. But we've seen, say, go back to when Gylfi Sigurdsson left, that Reading are able to, say, reinvest some money. Obviously not the same amount of money we're going to get from Elise, but in terms of rebalancing how we set up, in that case, then we went from 4-2-3-1 to a more of a 4-4-2, which ultimately won us the league in 2011-12. This time, I'd go to more of a 4-3-3. I think there's an opportunity to have, say, Ejaria or Swift in a kind of a midfield three, give them a bit of license to get forward ahead of Laurent and Rinomota, give Rinomota a bit of license to get forward as well, as more of a outright box-to-box player. And as you said, add in a couple of wingers, because we have badly missed that pace, that directness, ability to get in behind. And that's something that really helped some of our players that we already have. You think about a bit more kind of pace and a bit more ingenuity playing off Lucas Schwell, giving him a bit more space, a bit more kind of quick play that Ovi Ejaria can pick out with a through ball. There's a natural kind of evolution to this side that is kind of opened up by Elise going. Obviously, it's a big shame that he has gone, but there are opportunities even within this current group for us to kick on and develop.
I think one of the problems as well is that if you had Elise or Ejaria on the wing, particularly those two, were quite bad at tracking back, and Mate, I suppose, as well, and rejigging that around with some players who can actually cover that fullback area might really help the defence. Looking forward, certainly things for Veljko Paunović to think about. As you know, let's talk about the finances then. We've covered a lot at the end of last season with the news that the last accounts for the 19-20 season, I think it was, were published and were dismal. We don't need to get into any more detail than that. But the thing is that, Ollie, the difficulty for me is that if we sell, you know, sold Lise, let's say for argument's sake, we sell Swift and Laurent or two more players and that brings in, let's say, £10 million. The difficulty is, as fans, is we don't know when we bring in money that is proving to the EFL that we can run the club and avoid points deductions and, you know, cut the debt and the arrears and all that sort of stuff. And at what point we're bringing in money to therefore reinvest. And that's the difficulty at the moment, is when do we break the soft embargo? When do we get to the other side, which probably in reality we're not going to do this summer? Seems obviously very difficult to judge, but one, you've done an article for the Tyler Sten that kind of explains what's going on and everything. There's the established players rule as well, which is important. So what's going on with that, and what's the established players rule?
Yeah, so as you might expect with the EFL, it's not particularly straightforward. You know, what is good this summer now is that in June, all EFL clubs agreed, or they voted a majority or whatever, to publish a list of all the clubs in EFL currently under, they call it a registration embargo. It's essentially a transfer embargo. Obviously, previously, that's not been published, and sort of you have to go off either the local media or just sort of general whispers and rumours. And obviously, it has been rumoured that Reading have been placed under an embargo. There's some obviously no signings so far, as we've mentioned, but it is, I suppose, not comforting, but you know, nice to have it in writing that Reading are officially under this registration embargo from the EFL for breaching profit and sustainability rules. As you say, you know, made a horrific loss last season. Over the last 3 years, but yeah, so it's a bit complicated on whether we can make signings or not. Yeah, you mentioned the established players rule, so that essentially means that clubs under a profit and sustainability breach embargo, it means that they can sign loan players or free agents if the club has less than 24 established players in their squad. An established player is someone who is age 21 or over as of 30th of June, immediately prior to the commencement of the season, which the club is subject to the embargo. I'm reading that off the EFL website. So essentially, Reading have 15 of those players on their books at the moment, which in itself tells you quite how sparse the first team squad is. But yeah, so that does seem to give us some room to make signings, loan deals or free agents, as there are, you know, essentially 9 spots, according to the EFL, that Reading could fill, and they prove that they have a need to sign players. We asked the EFL to sort of try and clarify this already, because the EFL website does state that cases will be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. So there are no sort of blanket restrictions for all clubs. It's dealt with individually. And sort of this 24 established players rule is just one consideration the EFL might make when determining what sort of restrictions to place on clubs. So again, the EFL weren't able to sort of divulge the specific restrictions that apply to Reading. So yeah, we're not particularly clear on quite how Reading can make signings or sort of when Reading can make signings. I would hazard a guess that, look, I think it's ultimately down to, in my view, Reading proving to the EFL that they are, yes, they've made this massive loss, but they are moving on from that, and they have showed over the last 18 months is that they can run sustainably. You know, we've seen a lot of cost-cutting measures. You know, the only player we've signed for a fee in the last 2 years or so is Obi Ajaria for $3.5 million. The rest have been mostly loan deals, and obviously Josh Laurent on a free transfer. You know, we've got a lot of high salary players off the books. You know, Sonny Aluko and Sam Baldock have left the club in the last week or so. And obviously last summer we saw Mo Barrow, Chris Gunter, Gareth McCleary, Ruta Minone, all on sort of high Ron Gourlay wages, went off the books. So they are showing the EFL that they are learning, that they're moving on from sort of that period between 2017 and 2019 where they just went completely crazy with spending money. So I'd hope that might work in their favour. You know, the official If our website states that clubs will only move out of this embargo once they've rectified the breaches of the profit and sustainability rules. But quite simply, for Reading, that is, you know, almost impossible to do, because you have to make a loss of no more than £39 million across 3 years. Reading would need to make a profit of £33 million in the next financial year, you know, just to meet that. And as I say, that's just simply impossible. So I think hopefully it might be a case of perhaps the EFL being a bit more lenient because of the pandemic, and Reading carrying on with these cost-cutting measures, not going crazy, you know, not when the EFL say, okay, you can sign players within reason and we have to approve these deals, not then going and doing what I did 2 years ago, you know, when the soft embargo was lifted under Jose Gomez, and then George Puskas and Lucas Schau came in for combined fees of £13-14 million, you know, not doing that, just continuing to show the EFL that they can act responsibly in the transfer market. But yeah, as I say, it's been hard to get clarity on quite the restrictions that apply to Reading. But I would think, hope, as I say, that them proving that they are sustainable-ish now, that we might see some free transfers and loan deals in. But even then, probably still only three or four, and we probably are going to see a lot of the matchday squads this season sort of bulked up with academy players.
Yeah, which I don't think is a bad thing in and of itself. It just depends how good those academy players are. You say about the small squad, that was basically the thing that stopped us gaining the playoffs last year. If we had assigned two or three players in January, you know, might be laughing now, but alas, that wasn't the world we're able to live in. We have been able to sign up Tom McIntyre to a new three-year contract this summer. Michael Morrison's also sticking around for another year. That was an option in his existing contract. However, we have lost Yaku Mate to an injury. Look, he's done an ACL, I think it was, just on holiday or out and about, it seems. And almost 6 months, they're talking about him potentially missing. That would take us basically until the end of the year or end of January sort of time. So not a good start in terms of fitness with Yaku Mate being out. Let's talk about something good. The kit was announced today, 150th anniversary of Reading Football Club. It's a bit of gold trim, some thin blue and white hoops this year, with Select Car Leasing jumping in as the new sponsor. We've got a green goalkeeper kit as well. The away kit's all going to be announced later in the next few days or weeks. But overall, I must say, guys, I think it's a pretty nice kit. Sim, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I love it. It's simple. It doesn't try to do too much, but it's really effective in what it tries to do. Obviously, there's the kind of the link to the kit that we first had 150 years ago. That I think the one that we kind of were using back in 1871. So there's a really nice kind of historical link there. But there's a nice modern twist on it, and obviously with the gold trim, which kind of accentuates it and kind of makes it look like a special kit without going overboard. I think there was a danger of them kind of trying to do too much with this, maybe kind of plastering too much gold up and down the sides or something like that, or anything like that. But the way that they've done it, it looks really sharp. It looks really fresh. And I'm really looking forward to getting it, to be honest with you. And the goalkeeping one as well, with the Steve Death link, is a really nice touch too.
Yeah, £50 for the adult home jersey. Just looking through the Facebook comments now. Bobby Hall saying perfect. GJ saying fantastic. Chris saying it's cool. So yeah, everyone seems to be pretty happy with it, which is nice. And Ollie, it's actually nice just to have, you know, a home kit for a special occasion. And as Sim says, they've not tried to overdo it. The guys at Macron and everything seems to be pretty nice about it.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, hats off to the marketing and communications team. I think they got it spot on this morning. The video they put out was class, and it gave me goosebumps. You know, if you haven't seen it already, you know, do go and check it out. It's sort of a nice little journey through Reading history from 1871 all the way up to present day. You know, covering all the key moments. You know, the Simo Cup final, the 106 promotion, and there is a bit of a big chunk between sort of 1920 and sort of 1970s, that sort of nothing seems to happen. But
I think that's because nothing happened, to be perfectly honest. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was Ben Greenwood, obviously, you know, we've worked with before. Matthias done some graphics, and he's done some graphics for the club as well. Put together the video. Yeah, it's brilliant, and sort of they've got it bang on. You know, the pictures too, you know, it's a nice little touch, sort of getting the players holding, you know, sort of one of those, you know, stereotypical old, you know, brown footballs that sort of they used 150 years ago. So yeah, it's been marketed brilliantly, and I think it will sell very well. I think we were discussing it this morning that, you know, sort of I've not bought a home kit for maybe 6-7 years, but I mean I'll almost certainly be getting this one. And yeah, I think the goalkeeper kit, a special mention for that one as well. You know, it doesn't usually sort of get much love, the goalkeeping kit, and I know particularly last year's, that it was almost horrific, those just sort of crazy set of lines on the bottom half of that sort of lime green shirt, and it wasn't particularly nice. But this one, yeah, is bang on, sort of with the ode to Steve Death. Yeah, it's all top class, and I can't wait to see what they do with the away kit. There's been some whispers that they might try and replicate the yellow kit used in the Samod Cup final, and again that'd be brilliant. So yeah, I can't praise the club and Macron enough, sort of how well they've done with this, and hopefully there are sort of several more things throughout this season that sort of celebrate the anniversary.
Yeah, I'd add as well that in the hoops, you can't really see it in the photos, but this kind of faded prints of players' names and managers' names and everything from the past. I've seen Doyle, Dolan and Cureton, myself, and you, hopefully when you actually get the kit, it'll be much clearer and you'll be able to see all these, you know, famous figures of Reading history, which is, again, a really nice touch to have. And the goalkeeper kit, I agree, that tends to be the sort of thing they try and just go mad with the goalkeeper kit, because they know it doesn't necessarily matter as much. But yeah, that's really good to see for the club. You actually be able to see it in action on Saturday, 10th of July. Pre-season kicks off behind closed doors, alas, against Lincoln City at St Barewood Park. Reading then go to Scotland for a training camp. Friday the 16th of July, Aberdeen, again behind closed doors. That's in the afternoon, both games in the afternoon, actually. You can actually go to a game on Wednesday, 21st of July, 7 o'clock, West Ham at the Mad Stad, and then at the Mad Stad again, the 24th of July, Charlton. That's behind closed doors, a 2 o'clock kickoff, that's Saturday. But that West Ham game, 7 o'clock, Wednesday, 21st of July, is a game we can all go to. Season kicks off 7th of August, 3 o'clock away to Stoke. And then we've got Swansea in the Carabao Cup that Tuesday, and Preston, and then Bristol. So three games at home in 8 days after the season kicks off for us to finally get back to the Mad Stad for a competitive fixture. And really, there's not too much left to discuss. But I would say, guys, how from that moment that the final whistle went on the 8th of May and Huddersfield had just scored their late equaliser and we'd drawn 2-2, final day of the season, and your expectations from that point for the new season, how have they changed, or Sim, have they changed at all in terms of how you view how Reading are going to do in 2021-2022?
There was a long period where nothing really seemed to happen, and to be honest, I kind of checked out of Reading for a little while, just feeling so dejected after the playoff campaign had gone. So it's mostly influenced by stuff quite recently, looking at Elise going and Yaku Mate being injured. I'm still kind of cautiously optimistic. I think we'll get some decent signings in. We're not going to build a team that's capable of going for automatic promotion, but I do think we are going to strengthen enough to at least be kind of competitive mid-table. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a season that requires a lot of patience, I think, but if we can get some canny signings in, maybe hopefully kind of 6 to 8 at least, because we are going to need a lot of players coming in, then I think we're going to be fine. But just at the minute, a little bit unsure, but yeah, cautiously optimistic.
Ollie, would you have any advances on that?
Well, I mean, the last couple of days, I suppose, have been a bit depressing with the embargo news and the Elise sale. But yeah, it's tough one. I think, you know, we would have sat here, we did sit here 12 months ago, you know, quite pessimistic about Reading's chances for the new season, you know, with the whole chaos around the manager situation. So, you know, I certainly don't want to make any sort of rash judgments. You know, I think we just have to sort of sit and wait and see what happens. You know, people like anything with England this summer is that, you know, don't judge the team, don't judge the manager too early. You know, because quite frankly, anything could happen. We are going to need some new signings in, but it is exciting to an extent that we might see sort of quite a heavy presence of academy players coming in. So, yeah, it's a season to approach, I suppose, with sort of cautious optimism. Do I think we'll get close to the top six again? Probably not, but I think we'd be comfortably mid-table at least. As I say, you know, if we can get some more players in, but yeah, as I say, you know, anything could probably will happen.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the championship at the end of the day, and the teams that have come down look good, but they don't look imperious. The teams that have come up look okay again, fine, but none of them are sleeping giants, as it were. And Reading are just, I think you've still got a potential 25 goal a season striker. If players like Puskás and Ejaria can become the players that we think they're capable of becoming, then that's another boost. Or, you know, maybe we need them to do that if we're going to have a chance of going up. But ultimately, in the championship, there are 14, 15, maybe as many as 18 teams that Reading are in the same bracket of being competent on their day, very potentially awful, but only in short spells. And really, if the management is right, if you get a bit of luck, and if a couple of players can emerge and become really good stars, then there's the potential of a really good season. But you know, as you're absolutely right to say, it's a slog. It's a long, long season ahead of us. I think if the pre-season kicks off tomorrow, how many games have Reading got to play between now and May? Is it probably up towards 60 games that Reading are going to be playing in terms of friendlies and cup games and championship games? There's a lot of football right in front of us. And so let's just be loud and be proud, as they say, for the new Reading season. So hopefully an informative update for you in the summer. We'll be back potentially in the next few weeks if something massive happens. Obviously, we've got a little while now, just about a month more or less before the season starts. So hopefully we'll be back with another updates show before then, and of course the big season preview. So Ollie, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much. It's coming home.
Sim?
Cheers for having me. It's coming home.
I believe it is coming home. Come on, England. And as ever, come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs are